All right, so today we're going to dive into a case that you probably haven't heard of.
Okay.
It's called Stewart v. Laird.
All right.
And it comes from the early days of the American legal system, 1803.
Wow.
Now, you might be thinking, didn't Marbury v. Madison happen around the same time?
Yeah, very close.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
But trust me, Stewart v. Laird has its own twists and turns that make it worth exploring.
I'm intrigued.
Especially because it really digs into the very structure of the courts themselves.
Okay.
So imagine, early 1800s, young nation, still trying to figure things out,
Right.
and bam, you've got the Federalists and the Jeffersonians locked in this huge political tug of war.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And what's crucial here is that this power struggle wasn't just some kind of like abstract, ideological debate.
Right.
It played out very directly in the courts themselves.
Oh, for sure.
The Federalists, they were on their way out, but they had passed this law, the Judiciary Act of 1801, creating all these new courts, and then they very quickly filled them with their own people.
Oh, yeah, the so-called midnight judges.
Exactly. Talk about a last-minute power play, right?
Absolutely. So, how does our case, Stewart v. Laird,
Yeah.
fit into all of this?
Well, the case itself seems pretty simple at first.
Okay.
It starts in 1801 with a man named John Laird. He wins a judgment against another guy, Hugh Stewart, down in Virginia.
Okay.
Seems like a routine financial matter, right?
Yeah, you would think so.
Except this was right after that whole Federalist court packing spree.
Ah, so Laird got his judgment from one of these brand new courts.
Exactly. Well, then Jefferson's party comes into power and they promptly repeal that 1801 act, effectively abolishing all those Federalist stacked courts.
Oh man, what a mess.
It really was cases got reshuffled, and Laird suddenly finds himself having to go to a different court entirely to try and actually enforce his original judgment.
Oh, wow.
And of course, this didn't sit well with Stewart, who was, the one who lost in that original judgment.
Okay, yeah, I can see where this is going.
Right.
This isn't just about Laird and Stewart anymore.
Yeah.
This is like a full-blown constitutional showdown brewing.
Absolutely.
Did Congress even have the authority to just wipe out those courts and move cases around like that?
That's exactly the question that the Supreme Court had to grapple with.
Yeah.
And to make matters even more complicated, another issue popped up.
Okay.
Could Supreme Court justices also serve as circuit judges?
Whoa, wait a minute, what?
Yeah, it was common practice back then, but was it actually constitutional?
Wow, talk
Yeah.
about a double whammy for the court.
Right.
And remember, this is all happening just 1 week after the Marbury v. Madison bombshell.
Oh, yeah.
The tension must have been
Oh,
palpable.
absolutely. You can practically feel the weight of history right there in the courtroom.
Oh, I know, right.
Okay, so this is where it gets really interesting.
Okay.
Everyone's expecting another showdown after Marbury, right?
Right.
The court kind of flexes its muscles again.
But instead,
They zig when everyone thought they were going to zag.
yeah.
In Stewart v. Laird, the court actually upholds the 1802 Act.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah, they essentially sided with Jefferson and his party.
That seems like kind of a sharp turn for Marbury.
It does, doesn't it?
How did they justify that without looking like they were contradicting themselves?
Well, their reasoning is actually quite fascinating.
Okay.
Justice Patterson, he was the one writing for the court, and he very carefully builds his argument on two main points.
Okay.
First, he points to the text of the Constitution itself, specifically Article 3,
Yeah, okay.
and it says that Congress has the power to establish inferior courts,
Right.
which basically implies they also have the power to, change them or even get rid of them altogether.
So they're basically saying, look, the Constitution gives Congress this power, and it's not our place to question it.
Exactly. But they didn't just stop there.
Yeah.
They also invoked this concept of contemporary interpretation.
What does that even mean?
Basically, they argued that because Congress had consistently been reorganizing the court since 1789, this practice kind of became an accepted part of how the Constitution actually worked in practice.
Oh, so they're using historical precedent to back up their argument about the text of the Constitution.
Precisely.
Sorry.
By combining those two things, they managed to uphold the 1802 Act without directly challenging Congress.
Yeah, that's a clever way to avoid a huge fight.
It really was a very strategic move to prevent a full-blown constitutional crisis.
Okay, so they avoided a major conflict on the first issue, but what about the second one?
Yeah.
This whole circuit riding thing. thing.
Right.
Like Supreme Court justices acting as circuit judges.
I know. It sounds so strange today.
Yeah, it sounds like something out of a movie.
It does. But back then, it was just a matter of practicality. You know, right. The country was huge, travel was a pain, and there just weren't enough qualified judges to go around.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So it made sense for the justices to wear multiple hats, you know? And basically, Patterson argued that, hey, we've been doing this for 14 years and nobody has complained yet.
Yeah, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Right. Exactly. He called it practice and acquiescence.
Okay.
The idea being that this long-standing tradition had basically become part of the Constitution's unwritten rules.
Wow. So the court managed to navigate this really tricky situation.
They did.
They upheld this controversial law and they kept the peace with Congress.
It's a classic example of how the court can adapt to the changing political landscape while still staying true to its role in the Constitution.
It really makes you think about all the behind-the-scenes stuff that goes on in these big legal decisions.
Absolutely. And there's one little detail that always kind of makes me scratch my head.
What's that?
Chief Justice John Marshall, the guy who wrote the opinion in Marbury, he recused himself from Stuart v. Laird.
Oh, really? Why?
Officially, it was because he had been involved in some related lower court proceedings.
Mm-hmm.
But some people think that maybe he did it on purpose.
Interesting. Like he was trying to avoid another fight with Jefferson right after Marbury.
It's possible, right?
Yeah.
Maybe he wanted to work things out more quietly behind the scenes, you know?
Yeah. Makes you wonder about all the political calculations that go on behind closed doors.
It definitely highlights the complex interplay between law and politics.
So Stuart v. Laird.
Yeah.
It's not just about dry legal arguments.
No.
It's about political intrigue, personal ambitions, and strategy.
Absolutely. And sometimes the most interesting parts of the story are hidden in the details.
Yeah, like a little legal detective work.
Exactly.
Okay, so we've talked about the drama,
right.
The politics,
right.
All the, you know, the legal arguments, but here's the thing.
Yeah.
Why should we even care about this case? You know,
right.
Stuart v. Laird over 200 years later.
Yeah, that's a great question, right? Why does this matter to us now?
Yeah.
And then that's where I think this seemingly kind of obscure case gets really important. For one thing, it gave the whole federal court system this flexibility to adapt and change over time.
Okay.
Imagine if Congress couldn't tweak the courts at all.
Yeah.
I mean, we could have ended up with a system that's way too rigid to actually work in a growing nation, you know?
That's a really good point. It avoided a judicial gridlock.
Exactly.
But didn't it also give Congress, like, a lot of power over the judiciary?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's a valid concern, right?
Yeah.
Stuart v. Laird basically acknowledged that Congress does have the power to shape the court system.
Right.
And, yeah, that power has been used over time to create new courts, you know, like bankruptcy courts or tax courts.
Right, right.
Courts that deal with very specific legal issues.
Okay, so in a way, Stuart v. Laird helped shape the structure of the federal courts as we know them today.
I think that's fair to say.
But this whole balance of power between Congress and the judiciary,
yeah.
Where do we draw the line?
Right.
How do we prevent abuse?
That is the million-dollar question. Stuart v. Laird kind of struck this delicate balance, you know?
Right.
It recognized that Congress needs to have some oversight, but it also emphasized how important it is for the judiciary to be independent.
Right.
And it's a tension that's still very much with us today.
Oh, absolutely. Think about, you know, all the debates around judicial appointments and court packing and the scope of judicial review.
Yeah, exactly.
All these big legal battles that we're still wrestling with today.
Yeah, this seemingly quiet little case from 1803
right.
laid the groundwork for some really huge issues.
It really shows you how much impact a single case can have.
Absolutely. It reminds us that the way our judicial system is set up isn't permanent, you know?
Yeah.
It's open to interpretation, to debate, and yeah, even to political maneuvering.
Well, there you have it, folks. Stuart v. Laird.
A fascinating case.
It might not be as famous as Marbury v. Madison, but it's had a huge impact.
Oh, for sure. A lasting impact on the American legal system.
It just goes to show that even seemingly minor cases can have ripple effects throughout history and shape the way our government works today.
Absolutely.
So the next time you hear about, you know, these big fights over the courts,
mm-hmm.
remember Stuart v. Laird.
Yeah.
It's a reminder that these questions about, you know, power and balance and judicial independence,
mm-hmm.
they're woven into the fabric of our nation's history.
Well said.
And with that, we'll leave you to ponder those questions yourselves.
Yeah, keep exploring.
Until next time, keep diving deep.
Bye, everyone.